Live from Radio Row at the New Orleans Ernest and Morial Convention Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I like it. I like it. Makes it feel real, real important. Good job, Griffin. Good job. Griffin, back in the Findlay Toyota studio. That was kind of surprising, wasn't it? You had no idea the show was starting.
I did not.
Adam Hill was, as he does, he's talking about the luminaries here. He's very important, big-time football guy.
It's true.
Radio Row, you sound like you're out of breath because we're going to tell a story not to open the show about getting around in New Orleans. I have a lot of thoughts about New Orleans versus Las Vegas, not at the beginning of the show. Now, Danny and I were discussing, we have a rundown. We were discussing what we were going to talk about coming out. Some of it was going to be what we did last night, but not at the start of the show.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about what they did last night.
Bad.
I suggested last night when I heard their plan that we should just do the whole 3 hours.
I know. So meanwhile, the audience is like, we'll get to what you're going to talk about. Let's go. Adam Hill is here. Danny's here. Danny's going to join in later. JBT is going to join in as well. We got some scene setting convos we'll get to with someone from Kansas City and Philly. But Radio Row, NFL, football, lots of stuff going on. Raiders news. We actually have to start with the Lakers. Because the sports world has friggin' exploded over this thing. And now the jokes are coming about Luka to the Lakers and what just happened. Like, it is one of those deals. And the unevenness of the deal has so many people throughout the weekend and today, like, wait, this happened? Like, confirmation today, I see Luka, Lakers. I think the Lakers tagged it like it really happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I told.
Like, now it's official. Now you see him in a Laker uniform. When it came down, people are like, there's got to be a hack thing. Something happened. This is not, this deal can't be real.
No, I was in a group text with a couple people, including JVT, the other night. And, you know, when it first happened, and I just kept saying, I don't believe it. He's like, no, it's true. Like, Shams tweeted it twice. ESPN flashed it. I was like, yeah, I understand that it happened. I just can't believe that it happened. And I still don't believe it until I actually see him play a game. Like, then if he's on the floor playing for them, then I'll believe that it's true. But, man, it was just such a stunning type of trade. A trade that just doesn't happen in the regular season in any sport, really. You know, star for star. I mean, sometimes, you know, teams sell a star, that kind of thing. But star for star, middle of the regular season, you just don't see it. And then you saw people trying to contextualize it. Like, this is Lamar Jackson for Joe Burrow. It's not. It's not that. It's just stunning. Like, there's no way to really put it into context of what it would be cross sports. It's just such a bizarre, unusual trait.
What about from music? Like, if NSYNC traded Justin Timberlake to Backstreet Boys, like, who's the worst Backstreet Boy?
Well, I don't think it would be the worst, right? I mean, Anthony Davis is a good really good
right.
player. It would be anybody in, first of all, any boy band for Justin Timberlake would not be a fair trade. It would be a dumb trade. I mean, Justin Timberlake, star of all boy bands. So I don't think there would be AJ? Is that the guy? I think it is. I'm trying to think one of the Backstreet Boys, but nobody cares.
The guy with the eyebrows or the guy who wears the hat all the time?
I don't know.
I actually saw a Backstreet Boys video. Oh, I actually was in Reno. Now we're doing the story.
Oh, boy.
Went to a sushi place in Reno.
Why? Wait, it's not the 4 o'clock hour, right?
Heard it was good. No, and it was
we're not on Reno
it was actually
right
pretty
now.
It was pretty solid, but they had some sort of MTV channel on, and yeah, it was like a newer Backstreet Boys song. I'm like, I kinda like it.
There's no way there's a newer Backstreet Boys song.
Well, what year do you think it was?
Like 97.
2013.
Okay.
It's 12 years old.
Okay.
Newer.
Yeah, I mean I don't think you can do a music trade. I don't think you can do a movie star trade. You trade like
damn, I had one.
You know, if I knew I've never seen a Marvel movie or anything like that. If I knew like the comic book movies, you could trade like a Iron Man for Superman. I don't know. I don't know how you do it.
I saw someone suggest a music. Beyonce was in what group?
Destiny's Child.
So it was Destiny's Child made a deal with TLC and Beyonce got traded for Chili.
Okay. No, because Chili was just one of the group. Well, it couldn't be left eye.
For a second, I was like, because you didn't react. I was like, oh, wait, is that the one who passed away?
No, it's left eye. I think it's more, it is, because it is star for star.
How about Beyonce now for the lead singer of TLC, who is older and a little bit chunky?
The T-Boss?
Right? Didn't you say she was having a tough time?
I think she has an illness.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she put on some weight, and then she was having trouble dancing.
Well, she's like legitimately sick.
Yeah, it's not the first time I've done that.
Yeah,
not
I know.
Knowing, I mean,
well, it was that was.
We can go back to my legendary rant about Rebecca Seelfon.
Sure.
Who no one, do you know her?
Yeah, Spelling Bee girl,
who was homeschooled, and she just behaved oddly, and I was just gonna say, why were we talking about the spelling bee? Because that's what we do. And I got stuck on the homeschool thing, and I'm like, she is really awkward. And then after doing the topic, someone's like, hey, she's autistic. I'm like, yeah. Oops.
No, that's
and back then, like we didn't talk a lot about. I'm explaining away. Who cares?
It's why it came up.
I didn't get fired. I might get fired now for talking.
It's why it came up because me and some friends were at a festival, and TC was performing.
Yeah.
And T-Boz was really struggling, and we were like, man, what is going on? And then we found out, like, oh, she's got something very wrong with her. So yeah. It wasn't funny anymore. But
there's nothing wrong
with
Anthony Davis except that he's hurt a lot.
No,
and he's old, but he's still really, really, really good. And the Mavs clearly really, 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 really wanted him.
Is it like, I mean, what's the biggest musical group in the world right now? We're just going to go down. It's like whoever the biggest group is, I don't really follow, like, bands like that. Like, trading for, like, you know, Mick Jagger. Like a star that's way past his prime. You trade him to like the Rolling Stones for like whoever, I don't know, whatever the big band is out there right now. I don't listen to rap. I don't really listen to like rock to hear that kind of music. But it's a star for star, but one is in his prime and about to enter his prime and one is past it and injured, although they're both pretty injured. But it is star for star. Like it's not like star for scrub.
How do you think this happened? For such a little hole.
So, I've seen people taking the side of Dallas must have just called one team. That's it. And that's why it got to this point. And that's also why it was very quiet. Nobody knew that he was being shopped around. Why didn't you call other teams? You could have got more. And it sounds like, from the Dallas side, it's just because they wanted Anthony Davis.
They wanted AD.
They just wanted Anthony Davis.
But get something with him.
This wasn't the Lakers saying, hey, how can we get Luka? This is Dallas saying, hey, how can we get Anthony Davis? And Lakers saying, Luka, okay. It's wild. And I'm sure when Rob Pelinka got that call, he probably thought it was a prank call. He's probably checking, is this Nico, really? Okay.
By the way, there is a report that the Luka AD trade originally included multiple first and Dalton Connect. But the person said the deal got whittled down because Rob Pelinka was able to convince the Mavs that Luka is high risk.
Well,
like they were getting more, and Rob Pelinka's like, wait, lazy.
Tone it down. And what a trade by him. Great job by him.
A guy who has been beaten and battered publicly.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest ripoffs in sports history.
Well, also, like, we are LeBron fans on the show. It's a pro LeBron show, but we have been critical. We're LeBron fans of the player.
Yep, not GM.
LeBron the GM is a disaster.
Stinks.
And it sounds like he wasn't involved in this.
Yep,
and that's probably why something good happened.
Which
for the
is
Lakers.
Why that should have been the case since the championship.
Yeah,
even the championship was sort of in spite of his work as a GM.
Yep.
Yeah, he was kept out of it. You know what's great, too? The Jazz are involved. Danny Ainge said he had no idea that his picks were being used in this deal. And he said, I would have never done this if I knew it was helping the Lakers.
Wow.
That's how quiet they kept it.
Well, shouldn't you ask? Like, hey, what's...
Good point. Touche.
What are we doing here?
Touche.
You want picks? All right, we'll throw some picks in, but what are we doing? The Jazz just keep... The picks. They've got like 42 picks the next six seasons.
Meanwhile, my Nets have 9 first-round picks still from the Kevin Durant trade. 9.
Isn't it 6 and 3 swaps, though?
No, I think when I counted, it was six outright picks and three swaps. I'm sorry, nine outright picks and three swaps. There's actually nine first-round picks.
Wow. That's crazy.
I mean, there's another factor we should talk about, but you're going to be leaving a little later to go to opening night, so I'll mention her in the 5 o'clock hour.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Your boss.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yep. I won't put you in that position.
I have no idea what you mean.
Listen, we're in the same position, kind of, at Lotus Broadcasting. I'll be honest, I hesitate to rip Tom Brady too much.
Should.
They don't have, I want to say this the right way so people don't overreact or misunderstand me. We have Raider Nation Radio.
We do?
They listen.
I'm staring at them right now.
Yeah, they listen.
Listen to that station.
Yeah. Thank God they don't listen to you.
Exactly. Oh, they know.
So opening night tonight, where is that at? Is that at the basketball
stadium.
Arena? It's at the stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, opening night last year was at Allegiant.
It was Allegiant.
They made it bigger. Okay. Yeah, because 2 years ago it was at the basketball arena in Phoenix, right?
I believe so.
I was there. So
well, because and that's because the stadium's so far away.
Good point.
Yeah.
Okay, so stadium, but you were just there.
I was just there.
They did the commish's address at the stadium.
They always do it in the home team locker room.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll get into the kind of security they have for it, which I guess is not surprising. Was before we really get into what he said, was there something that you thought was the big moment?
Well, for us, locally, I mean, it was talking about potentially revisiting in the off season the restrictions on Tom Brady and what he can and can't say, who he can and can't talk to. He did laud Tom Brady for, you know, being, you know, very coherent, you know, very much in compliance with the rules. He also said that Tom Brady calls him very often. He's like, hey, am I doing it okay? Am I not crossing any lines? Like, are we good here?
Really?
Because he did.
That's a good public statement because I thought, well, I think we both said this, that Brady almost seemed to be pushing the limits, like to test out what the limits are.
Yeah, I think he's checking.
I thought. So I guess he's checking in. So
and
he's
okay. They might, you know, add or subtract next year based on what, you know, some of the owners think. But it did sound, I think one of the things that, you know, some people have said, hey, it really wasn't a big deal ever. It was, you know, media made too much of a big deal of this. But Goodell did seem to indicate during that answer that there was owners that were concerned. And that is part of why those rules were put in place, which makes sense. I mean, I don't think if nobody raised concerns, I don't think you would have put those guidelines into place. But, it sounds like they could revisit it, could talk about it, and where they're going. And, you know, obviously, a lot of talk about officiating was done.
Okay, hold that thought. Kamish spoke today, Raj. Adam was there. We'll get some more talking points out of what Roger Goodell said. We're just kicking off things here on Radio Row in New Orleans. It's all brought to you by Paul Padilaw. Loaded show today, so stick around. Adam, Cofield, Danny, JVT, they're all in. Great guests as well.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Radio Row in New Orleans. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw on ESPN Las Vegas.
So Adam went to the commissioner's yearly press conference. Big one, Super
very,
Bowl.
Very exclusive.
It is very exclusive, so you're very fortunate to get in. The RJ has a lot of might. It's Cofield, Media Row now. It should be Media Row. We're so insignificant here now with all the TV stations and digital. You can watch us on live video right now. We're trying to catch up. You can watch us. You can even hear us during commercial breaks, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah. So you went over there. You saw Raj. How big is that press conference? How many people are in it?
About 30.
That's it?
Yeah.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Maybe 40.
Nice job.
Yeah.
You're one of 40. Look at you.
Well, a lot of people, I think, just aren't here yet.
Good point. You've had a lot of good points early in the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Officiating.
A lot of questions about officiating. It sounds like they're very much looking at expanding the expedited reviews, which I think would be a very good move by the NFL. I think those have worked in a lot of cases. That would be great. They are still working on technology, first down technologies that they have tried that they might be able to implement further at some point. Raj did laugh about the, you know, conspiracy theories. He said, is this the same as when I write the script? And then everybody talks about that.
Well, look at Raj, sense of humor. Terrell Owens, the latest to come out on some interview and say, I would never bet against the Chiefs. This thing is all fixed.
It's just ridiculous. The numbers just don't suggest that at all. And then people start handpicking, like, the last couple of games. And, like, yeah, look, see, the Chiefs. Like, okay. But also, the numbers aren't really that skewed for home teams. Like, the numbers that the advantage that the Chiefs have is about the same as the average home team advantage in terms of officiating throughout the years. So, like, there's really no difference. Like, they're just at home a lot. That's the issue. Look, I think officiating is bad. I've talked about this, you know, since I've been in media, since I was a kid. It's like 7 years old screaming about how bad officials are. Officials are bad. They're not.
What's the biggest reason? Do we want to be ageist?
I mean, I think it's just a really hard job, for one.
It is a hard job. And they should be using as much technology as they can.
Of course.
Not constantly fighting it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there is no referees union. I misstated that a couple weeks ago and I was ranting about it. But they have power, obviously. They pulled that thing with the PI where they're just like, yeah, you want us to review PIs, we're not going to ever turn over or overturn a call. So we just won't do it. That kind of stuff needs to be taken out of their hands. And, we have to get technology on marking the ball. It's stupid. There's too many billions of dollars at stake. People's, you know, livelihood is at stake. And you've got, you know, 40 to 70-year-old guys walking across the field, getting diverted on the way.
Well, you know,
they don't know where the ball
is. You also know what's coming. Like, if there was technology, like, say there's a chip in each end of the ball, then that one rare case where a guy holds it, like, straight up to reach out, and then the middle of the ball is further out than the top or the bottom is, and you're like, well, he didn't get there. Like, okay. I mean, no matter what you do, there's going to be those sorts of things that pop up in terms of technology.
I'm not going to argue over this. I'm guessing that you could put four chips in a football and have every part of the football kind of repped.
I guess. I'm sure there's ways
close
to
enough. It's better than it is now. Any kind of technology is better than it is now. And, I mean, for personal reasons, the chain gang's always in my way, or I'm tripping on the chain on the sideline. So,
I mean, it's a ridiculous.
It's dangerous for them, too.
It's still a ridiculous notion. There's like guys that stand there and run out chains.
You didn't win the Nevada Sports Writer of the Year this year, right?
I didn't.
Were you ineligible?
Last year I was.
Okay, you can't win back-to-back years. You know what I want to do with the referees? You have to skip a generation if you want to go Nepo.
That's fair.
Like, Hockey Lee's kid should not be working right now.
No.
Nor should Siemens' kid.
Can we do it for
Jerry? And because it was one of the Siemens from that family who was he was the bottom judge, the down judge. His dad was a longtime official,
and he got it right.
Rest in peace.
He's the one that got it right.
He actually did get it right, yeah. He deferred. So silly.
No, I'm saying the Bills were short of the first. We all understand that, right?
No.
The Bills are absolutely short of the first down.
No.
The overhead view, because it's hilarious to me that so many people have made this all these broad, obviously they got it wrong. I'm looking at a camera that is, by the way, on the 38-yard line.
Yes.
So shooting diagonally, so you have no idea. The overhead view is the one that matters. That's the one where you see it. It's straight above, and he's definitely short.
You got it wrong.
He's short.
364-1100, 364-1100. Got some cool giveaways today. Let's give out. I should be smoother than this. Oh, we got tennis in town. That's right. We got tennis in town. Andre and Steffi. Love Steffi Graf. Going against Roddick.
Okay.
And aren't you? You're a big Bouchard fan, are you not?
Yeah, she was.
Got a good
funny
personality. Yeah,
she's funny.
Roddick and Bouchard against the Agassiz at the Pickleball Slam on a couple of Sundays. Yep. I said tennis, but it is a pickleball. It is pickleball. You know, you get older, you got to play pickleball. Not our salespeople, because one of our salespersons shredded the Achilles. One of those dreaded things.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's the scariest thing. I don't think there's going to be any shredded Achilles in this match.
It's coming up at Mick Ultra Arena. Get your tickets. That'll be at Mandalay Bay. We've got a 4-pack right now. Two Sundays from now, February 16th. Get to see the Agassiz, Roddick, and Bouchard pickleball. 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller number 7.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Radio Row in New Orleans. brought to you by the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar on ESPN Las Vegas.
So, you know, we're going to scene set. We're going to do that officially with the Philly side, the KC side. That'll be in the 4 o'clock hour. But we also like to set the scene because we both travel a lot. We like eating. We like tourism, whatever it is. I love New Orleans. I'm here every October. I'm going to make a statement that is kind of heartbreaking. I feel like Vegas has ruined every Super Bowl moving forward.
Yeah, still good.
There is no one here. Now, there's a couple of well, first of all, I've been to a lot of these, and Mondays are usually dead. I usually don't come on Mondays, but Mondays are generally slow. Last year was not, because it was Vegas.
True.
Last year was not. It was teeming. There was a lot of energy. It was crowded on Monday. One, because it's Vegas. I think New Orleans is awesome. I don't want to rip on Vegas because I love the city. I like New Orleans because, to me, it's got Vegas elements with history and grittiness. Dirty, really.
Yeah.
But there's so much history here. Here's the other problem.
And so many bad sidewalks.
The sidewalks are tough. Yeah. We were only in the French Quarter. You got to go out to the Garden District.
All right.
Where they're not going to cut down 200-year-old trees.
Yeah.
So these things just pop up like tiles. And you walk, and it is. Here's the other reason. They don't have enough rooms here.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that media people, like a lot of people have their setups, like their tables are here. You know there's going to be another like 50 outlets tomorrow and Wednesday. But I guarantee when they priced it, they were like, where do we stay? And in Vegas, where do you stay? We've got 155,000 rooms. I think it's that number right now. We lost the, Trop and the Mirage, so that dumped it down by like 6,000 rooms. But we're at like 155,000 rooms. I'll look it up here. There's no way. So the rates, we got our lodging really early. The rates here are, it's crazy.
Actually, Monday through Thursday weren't that bad.
Okay.
I was actually
still
pricing some spots. Yeah, it was, okay. You could stay. There's actually being like, way too specific about it, that 4 points on Bourbon Street, which I love that hotel, just like right in the middle of everything.
It is right there.
It was like $130 a night, Monday through Thursday.
Oh, wow.
And okay. It sold out like, 3 weeks ago, but yeah, it was cheap.
All right. But we are going to be the place that it just rules.
Yeah.
We have so many rooms. I heard one complaint someone made earlier was too much walking.
What, in Vegas?
Yeah. I'm like, that's every Super Bowl.
It's
actually, you're not fortunate enough. In some cities, there's too much driving.
Well,
L.A. and Miami are a nightmare.
That's why
you're gonna walk. This is a walking city. Now you can get rideshare.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gonna be easy later in the week, but this is a walking city. But it's cool to walk.
Yeah, I mean that's why Indianapolis is the best city for everything.
But it's Indianapolis. You're right. The basics, the structure of it are good. The city sucks.
That's great.
And the weather blows.
It's a great town.
There's like two steakhouses. There's no restaurants.
A lot of bars. A lot of restaurants.
Stop.
You don't know the places.
Okay.
There's a lot of great spots.
So, like Vegas, the other reason to come to New Orleans, the food here is insane. It's so good. And it's the whole city, too. Every mom and pop shop makes stuff.
Yeah.
And it's freaking really good. So, you know how jacked up I was. I have like,
by the way,
I have a list of like 37 restaurants.
And to your point.
For a 4.5-day trip.
To your point, there's like a little pop-up coffee shop here outside in the convention center. They have gumbo.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah. I was like, what are we doing?
I was doing gumbo every day.
It's great, yeah.
I got to get it tonight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unbelievable, unbelievable options.
It's fantastic.
So, Q Myers is behind us. So, one of his bits, as we do in radio, he's behind us. He's been riding Danny. Because Danny went out with us last night, and we are New Orleans vets, so we tied it on. We stayed out late.
Sure.
So he got up a little late. So that's his material. Ours, we're not mentioning the place. We're just going to say a higher-end steak chain joint.
A chain steakhouse.
Yes.
They went.
Do you know how many there are?
In New Orleans.
Did you look it up?
How many locations?
Yeah. My guess is, what do you think, 75?
I was going to say more.
Let's see. Yeah, so keep going.
But the point is, I was going to say maybe. No, in the best food city in America, Vegas is right there. But a place that's so known for not only its food, but its eclectic mix of food, its locations, it's the architecture of the restaurants, the uniqueness of every establishment, some of the best homemade food, some of the just creative food, unbelievable city for food. And they have their kickoff dinner for the week at a chain restaurant.
Yep. 100 plus locations, this place.
It reminds me, and I might have told this on the air before, I think I've told you, my dad, he's very, picky is not the right word, he eats like three things for his whole life is what he's done. He was in Japan for work for like 3 weeks, and I was like, oh man, the food over there has to be incredible, the sushi and the noodles, and I was like, where did you go? Like, what kind of spots? And he said, oh, it was great, I found a TGI Fridays, went like 90% of the nights. I was like, what? Sorry,
TGI, you know what?
I said TGI Fridays.
The funny thing is, there's a lot of people who do that. I had my younger brother's wife's parents, ex-wife now, they came to Vegas, and they hit, I didn't even know there was one in the middle of the strip. I'll say the name. They made sure to hit the Denny's in the middle of the strip. What are you doing?
And again, by the way, some of the places that we're mentioning, like, I love Denny's.
I like all of them.
I love TGI Fridays. It's a fantastic
I get
place.
The, whatever that is now, the 2, 4, 6, 8 thing at Denny's.
The point isn't whether
you don't do that.
The point isn't whether these places are quality or not. It's you can literally go there anytime.
I'm actually surprised how composed you are right now. You would not
stop.
Griffin, he wouldn't stop. I know, you're afraid to say it too loud. I mean, it's a great place, and it was a hell of a treat for these guys.
Oh, very, yes.
But no. No. You got to go local.
You know what a treat would have been? Sampling the local fare when you're traveling.
You know we have the rule on the Broadcaster Bites. All these UNLV trips.
No chains?
Like, in 7 years or 8 years on the beat, we've hit like 3 chains.
Well, why would you? That's like the entire point of traveling.
Like, Logan, Utah is a challenge.
Yeah. Although I found a...
But actually the...
I found a really nice sandwich place, actually, right by campus.
Yeah.
When I was up there for UNLV, Utah State.
I go local. I go local. Yeah, I'm saying, but it can be a little challenge, but not New Orleans.
But Logan has that one spot, like, on the main drag, too, that everybody goes to. Like, the breakfast place.
I didn't like that place.
Oh, really? Right. Well, everybody goes there.
I know.
So what I'm saying
it's a local restaurant.
What I'm saying is, yeah, there's local places everywhere, even I tried, small
you know
towns.
I know, because I tried. If we had gotten crap food last night, it's like, well, you know what? At least we tried. We didn't get crap food. It was awesome.
We had alligator sausage. Yeah. I don't think they had that at chain restaurant.
I really don't eat fish.
No, me neither.
And JBT ordered fish, and I was like, give me some. I'm like,
it was like fried catfish.
You know what's funny? I have it so in my head and to not mention the name of the restaurant. I was like, I won't even mention the fish. No, it was catfish.
It was fried catfish. And I don't like fish. And he said, no, it doesn't taste that fishy. Give it a try. And it was great.
Amazing. All right, up next, we're going to talk some boxing, get into the trade is real. Luka is a Laker. Steve Kim is on the way.
Steve Kim, the host of the 3 Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
We're both, like, really docile. Very relaxed.
Yeah.
Because you would not stop about that meal error last night.
I mean, it bothered me a lot. And it still does bother me, but...
Steve Kim, I don't think, travels as much as he used to, but he was quite the traveler covering boxing for, you know, a long time. Steve, am I correct on that? You cut down the travel a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I don't go to as many fights as I once did, although this past weekend for about 40 hours, I was actually in London for the launch party for the Undisputed Boxing video game. I left Thursday night, got home Saturday night, watched the end of the pay-per-view bout, and then last month I was in Saudi Arabia. So recently I've actually traveled a little bit.
Well, I got a couple angles here. First, I saw a picture of you. I got to say, my friend, at that party in London, your hair, like, to see your hair... I know you went gray. You said I'm doing it, but like you are. This is not a dig. It's gray. You're like Leslie Nielsen now. It's like you're. It's so, and it's full. Like I'm bald as hell. And the gray look. I was like, wait, is that him? Looks good.
Well, I don't quite have his deadpan delivery down yet, but I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, right. Bobby Kremen's over here. Okay. So our rule when we go on the road, because we're at Super Bowl, we're at Radio Row, Media Row in New Orleans, and I come here a lot, so I know the food scene. But anywhere I go, with UNLV or anywhere, like I do not do chain restaurants. So one of our groups, they did a a chain restaurant. Did you care about the food on the road? Did you try, like in Saudi Arabia? I don't even know where the hell do you go.
Well, Saudi Arabia, there was a hotel that had an unbelievable international buffet. I mean, it's one of the best I've ever been at. So basically, everyone in the hotel ate there. And it's funny, in Saudi Arabia, in the city of Riyadh, where a lot of the stuff happens and where the fight took place, there's a lot of American chains from certain coffee companies, you know which one, burger joints, certain donut franchises. It's almost like being in a big metropolitan city. And it was funny, when I went to the party in London, my one night there, I had a authentic British burger at a place called Burger King. I got to tell you guys, those blokes know how to charbroil a burger. I mean, I got to give some credit. That was a hell of a Whopper. I had a double Whopper. Wow. You know what? You know what? Thumbs up. They did a hell of a job.
You're quite adventurous. Let's talk about the Benavidez fight. I love this comparison, and I kind of got it right off the bat, but I want you to explain to the people. David Benavidez had a Nolan Richardson feel about him.
Yeah, 36 minutes of hell. I mean, Nolan Richardson, famous for the 40 minutes of hell, and, you know, shout out to Corliss Williamson and Todd Day and Lee Mayberry and Oliver Miller. And, of course, Scotty Thurman, the guy who hit the game-winning shot in 94. But that's what David Benavidez is. He is a one-man full-court press. He's all pressure all the time, and he has a way of wearing people down. For all his imperfections, I think that what he does best is fight. And the thing that I do appreciate about him the most is that when you come away watching him, you say to yourself, man, I saw a fight. I saw a real fight, and there's something about that that should be appreciated.
How about your reaction moving forward on Morrell?
Morrell fought well, but I did not think he was seasoned enough at 11 fights, despite his prodigious amateur pedigree, to handle the all-out assault. I thought at times he shelled up a little bit too much, and there came a point where I said, you either have to really box or be first in your attack, and instead, he kind of put the earmuffs on, and he didn't realize that if you're going to play catch and counter with Benavidez, that's almost impossible given the length and the velocity of Benavidez's combinations. And I thought he got caught too many times playing a lot of defense and not nearly enough offense. Look, he'll be a better fighter for this, but I did not think a guy with 11 fights was going to be able to handle what Benavidez brought to the table.
So the question always after a big fight is, okay, great job, what next? Benavidez kind of said after the fight, like, you guys ask me about Canelo every single time. He's definitely not taking this fight. Like, I need to have other plans. So is that just a pipe dream for Benavidez at this point? Like, that fight is never going to happen, so he does just have to move on to other things, most notably, obviously, the winner of the fight later this month?
Yeah, well, better be a B-ball. The WBC did make an announcement that the winner of Saturday night, because I think that was for the WBC interim title, would then be placed as the mandatory challenger. Now, that still does not mean that Benavidez doesn't have other options, okay? Because I think there's some politics at play that has really hampered the boxing business for the past, 25, 30 years at least. But I don't, you know, here's the issue with Benavidez. Does he fight again this year? I think last year only fought once, and the PBC fighters have a problem with activity. There's also talk of him going all the way up to cruiserweight for an all-Mexican battle against Zerto Ramirez, who's been very resurgent as a cruiserweight. And I don't know exactly how feasible that fight is. I'm going to make a call to Golden Boy later this week. But Benavidez has made strides. Look, he didn't sell out the T-Mobile Arena. That's a very big building. I know they had to do some discounts and they gave some tickets away. But there was still a substantial crowd there, probably right around 10,000. And I'm going to go back to my other point. When you see David Benavidez a few times, he's the type of guy that you want to see again. So there's something to build upon there. But we shall see, does he actually bite and maybe make that trek to Saudi Arabia to face the winner of Better Biev and B-Ball?
Steve Kamm on Cofield & Company. His spot is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. Should the NBA void the Luka deal?
Well, me and Jason Whitlock debated that today on Fearless. I'm not so sure, to be honest with you. Look, unlike most trades that involve superstars, Mavericks actually did get a pretty good player in Anthony Davis, who's probably headed to the Hall of Fame. And, look, I understand There's a reason why they call him street clothes. He's not exactly A.C. Green or Randy Smith when it comes to durability. But, you know, I'm a Laker fan in recess. Here's the thing. Given Luka Doncic's physical state, he looks really out of shape. He's consistently put on weight. He doesn't play a lot of defense. I don't know. Are we sure that we're getting the next Kareem or Shaquille O'Neal? I'm not really convinced of that there, guys.
I do have to make one correction. I'm not sure why I'm making it with you, but it's for the audience because I saw your guy, Coach JB, was talking about a deal being voided years back with CP3 and the Lakers. Well, there was a reason that deal was voided. First of all, David Stern's was an overreaching jackass, but also the New Orleans franchise at the time was not being run. I mean, the NBA was managing it or was about to take it over, so he voided it. And like you said, this deal is not that lopsided. I didn't think that deal back then with CP3 was that lopsided either.
Right, I mean, Pau Gasol's the guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame, or is in the Hall of Fame, isn't he? It's not like we gave him flotsam and jetsam. So, but there is a history where the Lakers seem to be on the good end of this stuff. But, you know, from a pure basketball standpoint, LeBron likes to be ball dominant, right, like a lot of other players. So does Luka. I'm actually fascinated to see how that works out. And by the way, defensively, the Lakers got much worse. Okay?
Yes, they have to make more trades. Yeah, they have to make more trades.
Yeah, and I don't – though maybe this move is about 2 years from now. Maybe this is the first step of the Lakers getting out of the LeBron era, which to me, and you know how I feel about it, Cofield, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Well, they seem to have gotten out of the LeBron is the GM era, which I think is much needed.
Yeah.
This
is a deal that had nothing to do with Clutch Sports. It probably surprised even them. Yeah. The Lakers are in an interesting dilemma because they're still a major franchise, but I just don't. They're not terrible enough to completely rebuild, and they're certainly not elite. They're kind of right in that abyss of mediocrity.
Is this real with Garcia and Haney? Like right back to it in a two-fight series?
Yeah, I mean, look, they have enrolled in year-round drug testing programs. All the parameters have been met, so they will actually have a fight where they will co-headline at Times Square in New York sometime in May. Oh, wow. And they still need to make an announcement on who's going to be the TV broadcaster. I've heard several different things on that. And then I believe sometime in the fall that they will have their rematch. Yes, I believe that's a done deal.
Aren't you far more excited about the completely real and won't be fixed at all Jake versus Logan Paul fight?
You know, Jake... Well, now there's rumors that Jake's going to fight Canelo Alvarez, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know what to think about it. Brother versus brother. I mean, what is this, the modern-day Cain versus Abel? Look, this is what boxing has become to a certain degree, and like I've said, there are no solutions to fixing it. I don't get overly emotional one way or the other. The bottom line is boxing is not what it once was. Look, it'll never die, but it'll never be fixed either. I think that's the reality. So, as I like to tell people, you set it up, you make it, I cover it. That's the deal we make.
Steve Kim is up with Cofield & Company and ESPN Las Vegas. Couple of TV highlights to get into. One, it sounds like you're really jonesing for football and ready for the Super Bowl, or you're just nostalgic. Are you watching a lot of the old Super Bowls on NFL Network?
Well, the NFL Network had the one day, and they go through Saturday and Sunday where they show all the Super Bowl highlight films. There was a time I watched every single one of them, and every year before the Super Bowl, right, the Saturday night before or Sunday morning, I'd get up to about Super Bowl 12 and I'd fall asleep. But I'll be honest, I have not watched the last, I would say, 20 of them. There's a certain magic to the ones in the 70s and 80s with John Facenda.
Yes.
I mean, and they had a magical ability to make some of the worst football games look like classics, right? Now that I'm a little older, a little bit more cynical, it's not quite the same, but the ones from like Super Bowl 7 or 8 all the way to about Super Bowl 23, I could binge watch those still even to this day.
I want you to watch for one thing. Some of the old Super Bowls, and I'm not even talking like old, like even like 20 years old. It's almost kind of shocking the quarterbacks we consider legendary from those eras. at times how inaccurate they were. Like, I know you're an old school guy. I see you all the time on the LeBron and Jordan stuff. But there are times I watch some of the old games and I'm like, man, those are easy passes these guys are missing. I think most quarterbacks now have gotten so proficient at just the basic passes are almost a guaranteed completion.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was a time growing up, a lot of quarterbacks were right around 50%. You throw 50% today, you know what they call you next? Wide receiver.
Yes.
I mean, it is different. I mean, look, Steve Young in 1994 threw for 70%, and we thought that's like hitting .500 in baseball. Yeah. Now, basically, everyone's over 65%. Now, a lot of that has to do with the short passes, the shovel passes, smoke screens, pop passes. But you are right. Look, there is a time when the passing game was not nearly as modern or sophisticated or as easy. Because let's face it, the defenses are a little bit different. The game was more violent back then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that the quarterback play, and overall really the passing offenses have evolved, certainly from the 1970s and 80s.
We have another OJ doc that's out. You going to watch it?
I started on part one and two, and I told Mario, he was disgusted. And he said, yeah, Steve, that's like watching another Muhammad Ali documentary. What are we going to learn at this point? But the American Manhunt, it's on Netflix. Steve,
yep.
Guys, I actually learned something. There was actually key parts of the evidence that was never used in the trial.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought part one and what I saw of part two before I fell asleep, guys, that was actually pretty interesting and good.
I believe you. I've anytime someone's like, I don't need to see a documentary on this. Like, what? How do you know everything? And as time evolves, we learn more. There's so much stuff I forget too. Like, you were there, right? You were in L.A. at the time. Like, even people in L.A. like, you didn't realize all the behind the scenes stuff that was going on.
No, I didn't. And to this day, I'm still sour that NBC cut away from Game 5 of the NBA Finals. I'm a huge Olajuwon fan. And I still remember as the game went on, it went from full screen to half screen to a little box to a white Bronco. And I don't mean John Elway.
Do you know where you were? Because I remember where I was when that was happening.
I was working at a hobby shop. And
oh, wow.
They had a little TV there. And it was surreal. It really was. And they got some great look. When you watch part one, if you choose to do so, of American Manhunt, you're going to see footage that had not been released before. And so, look, you always learn something, okay? And I've always said, look, if people can watch the movie Karate Kid or The Natural or The Titanic 50, 60 times, why can't we watch different documentaries of a particular subject, this one here being of O.J. and Nicole Simpson?
Good stuff. What do you got coming up on 3 Knockdown Rule?
Well, me and Mario discussed the card, and we discussed some of the other stuff surrounding the card and David Benavidez. And Mario rips me for watching that O.J. documentary.
Steve, have a good week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.